Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rucca. A town hall meeting was held in Astoria in August to discuss the aerial spraying of clear cuts in the forest. It was the eighth meeting around Oregon, sponsored by Beyond Toxics, a Eugene nonprofit devoted to protecting human and environmental health. We'll hear four speakers from that meeting. In order, they are John Burns of Cedar Valley at Gold Beach, the area where 40 people were sickened by aerial herbicide sprays from a forestry helicopter; Meg Thompson of Oceanside; Daryl Ivey, a timber employee who was sprayed repeatedly while on the job and whose videos you may have seen on the Oregonian website; and Lisa Arkin, director of Beyond Toxics. Here's John Burns.
John Burns, my wife Barbara, and we were the ones that on the video there that got hit. And when we got hit, it just, you didn't know what to do. And so what we tried to do from there is try to find out what happened and what the chemicals were. And then as more and more of our neighbors around us became violently ill, emergency room visits and coughing up blood, et cetera, et cetera, we finally came together as an organization, as one, and trying to figure out what the chemicals were. And as you saw on there, it took 6 months that we fought with the state. And it wasn't until, actually after we started the whole procedure and trying to get things done, we started off locally. And this is why I wanted to address the community active part of the whole thing. Started off with us trying to deal with it on a local level. Through our commissioners, everyone. Zero. So it went to state. State did zero. So I called Lisa Arkin, and I said, "Lisa, what can you do for us?" And she said, "Well, what happened?" We told her. And she said, "Well," so we started from that point on. And it listed some of the symptoms of what people have suffered. That's only a very, very small amount, because with Lisa's help, we ended up arranging and doing a very detailed survey for the people's health and what happened to them, or their animals, the damage to their property, etc. So with that, we ended up going and we petitioned the federal CDC and then the EPA, and we wanted to know why our state will not give us answers and why they will not do anything for us and keep trying to throw us to the back of the bus. And so with that, they finally put enough pressure on, and the state started the investigation then. So everything that I say that from this point on will be documented facts and truth and that came out of the total inspection and investigation of everything was done by the state and the EPA, federal EPA. So they found out what actual chemicals were that. And the helicopter pilot lied. He violated a lot of laws and even lied to the state and everybody else about it. So he was actually ended up being fined $10,000 and his company $10,000, and they knocked him off the list for 1 year. And then what they did was he was able to go through arbitration and appeal, and he ended up getting only the knocked off the list for 1 year. So no fines whatsoever. And so we had documented proof of all this stuff. Well, 45 of us shows there became ill and really seriously ill. And we've been dealing with that ever since. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot more things because there's something I really want to emphasize here mostly, and that is the chemical mixes and the tank mixes that these pilots and these sprayers do. They have to be certified, licensed, applicators before they can acquire or get these chemicals and mix them like they do and everything. So when anybody tells you or tries to tell you, well, you know, these are just, you know, you buy Roundup off the shelf, you know, and blah, 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 that is so far from the truth. That's like going across the ocean, say it's just a pond, you know. But so they found the chemicals that were on my property and others' properties there, and they confirmed everything that we said from the very beginning, which finally gave us confirmation of you know, some, because there are so many lousy prints about us in the newspaper and everything else, but it showed verification, and that really helped us, and we were able to proceed from that point on, going to the state senate and also the representatives many times with Lisa, and working for changing these laws. And so we ended up getting that part. Now the part I really want to stress is the chemicals mixes. And Dale will be able to tell you a lot more about this too on Q&A or whatever. But what we're sprayed with is 2,4-D, and that's the basis for Agent Orange. They change the chemicals to make Agent White, Agent Orange, or Agent Purple, Agent Black, etc., white. And so they just change the chemicals to the 2,4-D to do that. Well, then on top of that, what they will do when they're spraying an area, they will add other herbicides to it also. And so with the other herbicides they add to it, which some are not supposed to be mixed with 2,4-D, like what happened to us, because triclopyr was mixed. Well, you never put chlorine with 2,4-D because it becomes extremely toxic. Triclopyr is a basis of a chlorine-based chemical. And so they mix those together. And then they ended up mixing a surfactant and adjuvants and crop oil. So you have the hydrocarbons and everything else mixed in this too. So now you're getting bombarded with a chemical mix that nobody has any clue whatsoever is the outturn of what happens. And that's why so many of us got so sick, violently sick. You know, and even our fire chief, even up until 2 or 3 months ago, he would still end up coughing up blood. So the other part of that is volatilization, because as it mentioned in the film there, that when this application happens, and then when fog or mist moisture comes in, hits it, because after the time lapse of what they say that the chemical is dead and deleted and so on is gone, the chemical residues all stay there in the compost and in the soil. So when the moisture hits it, it volatilizes, goes into the gas form. Now, some of you know who Tyrone Hayes is. He's a professor at UC Berkeley, and he ended up doing a 15-year study, and he's proven and documented that these chemicals will volatilize, and then they'll go in the atmosphere, and they can travel up to 1,000 kilometers, which is 621 miles. That's another state, and come down in the rain. And so that is documented, and that's facts and proof. So what is said here about you getting sprayed in a local area, that does not mean that you're not going to get it 50 miles away up a canyon someplace. So that's the part that I really want you to understand, the volatilization of these chemicals, because it's not going away. And when they spray every spring and fall for 3 to 5 years, depending on the clear cut that they want to work on, you know, that means that whole community and everything that drifts out of there for the next 5 years possibly is contaminating and destroying life.
So I'm Meg Thompson, and I'm retired, and I was a child psychologist, and thought I was moving with my husband from Portland to Oceanside and just living the good life. And I had been an advocate for children, worked a lot with child abuse over the years, and children are the most vulnerable. And when I learned that Arch Cape and Rockaway citizens were getting notifications in their water bill because of the clear-cut induced turbidity and more chlorine in the water, that there were cancer-causing byproducts. And if you're a water user and you're concerned, you should call your doctor. That was kind of the motivation for me to get more involved as an activist. I think about being Dr. Meg in my office and having a family come in with a mother who's pregnant and a father concerned about their toddler and asking me, Dr. Meg, should we be concerned? Well, you bet you should be concerned. Not only are the parents more at risk and children more at risk for cancer, the family is very at risk for fetal abnormalities or miscarriage. The toddler and new baby are very much more at risk for neurodevelopmental disorders, hormonal disruptions related to some of the chemicals, developmental disabilities, lower IQ, higher risk for ADHD and autism. And these are very real concerns, and they harm us as individuals, they hurt our family, break our hearts, but it's a public health emergency, and we need to really recognize that. When you look at the past history of epidemiological research on lead poisoning, fetal alcohol exposure, asbestos exposure, secondhand smoke, all of these are toxins. And of course, we don't do experiments on people and find out that, yes, this is harming them. We do long-term epidemiological studies. John is very right. We're not doing those on the chemical cocktails that children are being exposed to. But the animal research and the growing epidemiological research on pesticides and herbicides is very clear. These are toxins. Our children and fetal development are at most risk, and we need to protect our most vulnerable children. When I was a child psychologist, I was part of, in the early development of the child abuse statutes for the state of Oregon on an advisory panel. And we think about physical abuse and sexual abuse, but there is neglect and threat of harm. And if a parent knowingly exposes their children to poisons, it's against the law, you're abusing your children. Well, we as a culture and a society are abusing our children by exposing them to pesticides, and we need to really think about why. And I really am proud of the people who are willing to speak up and have the courage to speak out. I've been in Oregon 40 years, and I came here because this is the promised land, this is the green state, and Oregon, was a leader back then. Well, we are no longer a leader. We are deluding ourselves into thinking we are. And I came from West Virginia originally, where the exploitation of people to take coal out of the ground is horrendous. People die. I have family from the mines, many family members be exposed to health effects and death from mining practices. And the mentality that gets set by the powers that be, that we need the jobs, it doesn't matter what we do to the environment, we need to wake up and look at the psychosocial impact of why we're allowing ourselves to, as a culture, stay in that level of denial that the profits and the ability to, quote, create jobs are more important than our public health. So I'm proud of the people who are having the courage to speak up. It's risky because you get blackballed or said you're crazy or that you're inventing this or doing it for the money. But we need to do it for our children and for our public health. And I'm working with the North Base Coalition, or North Coast Basin Coalition, to help protect our drinking watersheds on the North Coast. Originally being from Portland, I thought I didn't know where anybody else's water came from, that everyone had the same protections as Bull Run Watershed. Well, that's not the case. And I think we need, as citizens in Oregon, to have newspaper articles, talk with the people in our town, learn where our water really comes from and what the risks are to our water. There will be, in the next month or two, for surface watersheds, the drinking watersheds, risk assessments that DEQ will be providing to help each water district look at what the real risks are and how to use citizen input and the water commissioners and city officials to develop water protection plans, and DEQ and regional solutions for the North Coast Basin will be providing technical assistance and advising and resource development for us. Each community, as our needs are, the geography and the circumstances are different from community to community, but we all need very strong water protection, because this is our future, this is our health, and we need to protect our children.
My name is Daryl Ivey. I came down here last November, my wife needed an operation. Afterwards, we were getting ready back to go back up to Alaska, and I took a job. I said truck driver. I have a truck driving license. The helicopter companies weren't spooled up for fire season yet. They have a lot of guys that come out of the field that are in the hangars. They don't need some new guy, you know, Columbia Helicopters or whatever. So I was like, well, I'll use my hazardous materials, explosives, driver's license. I'm going to get a job driving a truck. I started driving a truck. I noticed they were locking the gates behind us. Well, why are we locking the gates? And then we started mixing chemicals. We weren't measuring. We were just dumping chemicals together, you know, and I've been around solvents in the aircraft industry all my life. And so if they can handle it, I can handle it, right? These chemicals can't be that bad. Pilot says he's been doing this for 20 years. He doesn't have a weird twitch or a third eye. So I can handle it. So I just jumped in and started helping these guys mix these chemicals, like he said. These are Long Island tea concoctions, and your hangover tomorrow is going to be a little different than it would be if you knew you drank straight rum or maybe had a beer, because they're just mixing it all together. And they started locking the gates. We started spraying. I don't know if you ever heard about the 747 called the Super Tanker. I was part of that project with Evergreen, with Dale Smith, and we did a lot of aerial spray tests with the 747. We'd take 20,000 gallons, and we'd try to figure out how to spread our effluent properly on a forest fire or to make a forest line. And so I had an idea about drift and about how drops, you know, you want, whether you want heavier drops or lighter drops, depending on the wind at what elevation. But I saw a helicopter flying and spraying these chemicals, and our drift was going hundreds, not just a couple feet, hundreds of feet off target. And down in Arizona with a 747 going 300 knots, our stuff fell where we wanted it. I was thinking, my pilot's good. He's an Apache helicopter pilot. He can put a bomb where he needs it. How come this stuff's going the wrong way? And so lights started going off, and I just started filming. I started getting sick. Now I'm a 45-year-old guy. I'm done making babies. I eat very, very healthy. I eat organic. I work out every day. And I, you know, normally when I've been sick before in my life or I'm around toxins, 2 or 3 days later, I bounce back quick. It's not going to affect me, especially if it doesn't affect this guy. You know, the guy I was working with, he smoked 2 packs a day and drank a bottle a night and still got up and went to work, and he's still there. I can sure as hell be there, right? Wrong. This stuff brought me to my knees, put me in an emergency room, decontamination unit, within 17 days. 17 days. Been to Papua New Guinea, Australia, Peru, Brazil, Arctic Slope, the oil fields where they don't show you on TV, you know, ice road truckers, I've been where they don't film. And this stuff brought me to my knees. But it didn't do that to my coworkers. So what she says is exactly true. It affects some people differently than it affects other people. I would not want to be a fetus in a lady's belly if it does that to a 45-year-old guy that's been around the block. Why me and not them? I don't know. But I do have a theory. If you drink a bottle of vodka every night and you hand me a glass and I don't drink, I'm going to be a real goofy feller for a while and fall over sideways. You have tolerance to it. And if you smoke 2 packs a day and you hand me a cigarette, I'm going to turn blue. I personally think that you build a tolerance to this stuff. And I do think that these people that are around these chemicals will be affected by them at one point or another, or their genetic offspring, or in some way they're going to be affected just because they didn't end up in a decontamination unit. I got pictures that would, y'all would, I mean, I was spitting blood up. I had welts everywhere. I was messed up. And I don't know even where to go. I could talk for hours about the chemicals, how bad they are, the lies that they tell you, locking the gates behind them, the concentrations of these chemicals. Wow. And they're putting it in the forest by the hundreds, by the thousands of gallons. They're putting it everywhere. It's crazy.
So why do they spray? They spray herbicides to defoliate our forest. And this is private industrial forest, also state forest. The federal forest banned aerial spray of herbicides in the 1980s because of the evidence of harm to human health. So you will not see a helicopter spraying in our federal forest. That's very important because, you know, here in Oregon, we have what are called the ONC lands, that checkerboard. So on the federal part of the checkerboard, there is no aerial spray. But the private lands that are mixed with the federal forest are sprayed, and the same river runs through them all. It's not like the river stops and goes around the private forest. No, it flows through it, and as well as salmon habitat. They defoliate in order to kill all competition with a monoculture crop of marketable, merchantable fir trees. And so there are pre-emergence and post-emergence herbicides. There are different kinds that are sprayed in the spring. Those are pre-emergence, such as atrazine, 2,4-D, triclopyr. And then in the fall, the mix is different. It's glyphosate, clopyrrolid, and imazapyr. So different kinds of chemicals affect plants at different times depending on the growth cycle. The World Health Organization just determined that glyphosate is a probable carcinogen. And the way glyphosate works for a plant is it causes the cells to proliferate, and the plant essentially grows itself to smithereens. The cells burst, which is the way cancer works. And it's all about the money. And the reason it's about the money is this is not your mom and pop family forester anymore. These forests are owned by REITs, real estate, investment, real estate.
Trust.
They're owned by East Coast big corporations.
Real estate, yeah, real estate investment trust. There we go. So, for example, another group of workers, they were loggers working in Douglas County outside the town of Glide, were sprayed by an adjacent helicopter application while they were doing a logging operation. And there was no way to get to the bottom of who was responsible for what, because the dirt was owned by the REIT, which was based in Illinois. The trees were owned by Roseburg Timber. The helicopter company was owned by, I think that was Appleby. No, you know, it wasn't. Another company. And then the logs are exported by a different company. What we have a lawyer in the audience. You know, that makes it really hard to find the culprit, does it not? You know, is it the company that owns the land, or the trees, or the ones that hired the workers, or the ones that's baiting the logs? So it's all about a decision made by an accountant or a board of directors of a real estate investment trust somewhere else, not in Oregon. They don't care about your drinking water, nor your community health. So that's why things have, in a sense, I think have gotten out of control. So, for example, in the report we did with 3 years worth of data, year one we found that approximately 5.2 pounds per acre were being used of herbicide tank mix. Within the third year, it had gone over 7 pounds per acre. Now, we don't know why, but it could be that these chemicals are not working in the environment like they used to because the plants are becoming habituated, so you have to have more toxic tank mixes. We don't know. More research needs to be done, but in the state of Oregon, you cannot get the spray records, and records are destroyed after 3 years. So compared to Washington, Alaska, and Idaho, and California, Oregon is the lowest common denominator for forest regulatory practices, or regulations and practices. So, for example, there was no buffer around homes or schools until this legislative session. We don't protect our drinking water. We allow clear cutting and spraying over all headwaters and tributaries down to the water. So a helicopter can traverse back and forth over headwaters to drinking water streams and salmon barren streams. We have plenty of charts that show the difference. The ability of the public to access records is better in other states. The monitoring is better in other states. All surface water is protected in Washington and Idaho. That is not true in Oregon. Also in Washington and Alaska, certain chemicals like atrazine are banned for use near any kind of protected groundwater and drinking water. Oregon has a problem, and you'll see the lobbyists for the timber companies these are very expensive commercials on television, on Pandora, on Google, claiming that Oregon has the best forest practices and is a leader. That is a lie.
Yes.
We are way behind other states, and we may have had the first Forest Practices Act in the 70s, but we're still stuck in the 70s. Beyond Toxics worked hard with people like John and Meg and Nancy and Jane and Erica to bring people to our state capitol over and over and over again. Four hearings were held on this topic leading up to the legislative session, and I won't go into all the detail of the very interesting pathway it took, but we were able to pass a law the very first year it was introduced. The new law has the following beginnings of protection. So we're just starting. We're not done yet. There's now a 60-foot buffer around homes and schools equal to that of salmon streams. And this was a point we brought up. How is it we protect salmon and not children on the playground? Now helicopter pilots are required to be licensed in pesticide application as well as flying a helicopter, and they have to renew the license every 5 years. I was shocked to learn that wasn't required previous to 2015. There's now a 24-hour hotline that you can call if you've had a pesticide exposure, and the state is now required to respond to you within 24 hours and not 7 days, as was in the case in Gold Beach. There will now be public access to spray notifications. That's just a notice that there will be a spray. Previously, you had to pay money for it, and you got it by snail mail, and usually they arrived after the spray had happened. Now all that will be online, and the public will have free access. That does not mean you get advance warning. You just have a 12-month window to know that something will occur near your property. These are good steps, but they're baby steps, and we will continue to involve all of you to help these brave people here to come back to the legislature in 2017. Oftentimes in these panels, we bring in an economist, and so what we can, data we can offer you is that, again, Oregon is the lowest common denominator. Oregon timber companies pay far less timber tax and excise tax than any other state. So Weyerhaeuser in Washington pays quite a bit more per board foot than in Oregon. So there's revenues that you're not realizing if we were to simply make it a level playing field. That's number one. And I agree the counties need the money. The other thing is, it's a cost-benefit analysis, but we don't need to poison in order to get the revenue. So there's something called FSC Wood, which is Forest Sustainability Council. It's sustainably harvested wood. It's a pretty penny. You can find it in, you know, your hardware stores. So Washington has double the acreage in FSC grown wood where they do not allow aerial spray, and they have large riparian buffers. Idaho has 8 times as much acreage in FSC production as Oregon. We can do it better. We need to do a different kind of economic model.
That last speaker was Lisa Arkin, director of Beyond Toxics. And you've been listening to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Walker.